Tape number 3 in the series on the Roman Breviary for summer. July 19th, St. Vincent de Paul, confessor. Vincent de Paul, a Frenchman, was born at Puy, not far from Dax in Gascony, and from his boyhood was remarkable for his exceeding charity towards the poor. From the care of his father's flocks, he was sent to study letters. He learnt the humanities at Dax and theology first at Toulouse, then at Saragossa. Having been ordained priest, and having taken a degree in theology, he fell into the hands of the Turks and was led captive by them into Africa. But being sold into slavery, he won his owner, an apostate, back to Christ. By the help of the Mother of God, therefore, Vincent and his owner hurried away from the shores of the barbarians. Then Vincent undertook a journey to Rome to visit the thresholds of the apostles. Having returned to France, he governed in a most saintly manner, first the parish of Clichy, and then that of Châtillon. He was appointed by the king as principal chaplain of the French galleys, and showed marvelous zeal in striving for the salvation of both the drivers and the rowers. The holy Francis de Sales appointed him superior of the nuns of the Visitation, whom he ruled for nearly 40 years, with so great prudence that he amply justified the opinion of their most holy founder, who confessed that he knew no worthier priest than Vincent. To the preaching of the gospel unto the poor, especially to the country people, he devoted himself unweariedly until he was disabled by old age. To this apostolic work he obligated both himself and the members of the congregation, which he specially founded under the name of Secular Priests of the Mission, by a perpetual vow confirmed by the Holy See. And how greatly he labored for bettering the discipline of the clergy is attested by the seminaries erected for senior clerics, by the frequency of sacred conferences among the priests, and by the religious exercises preparatory to the sacrament of holy orders. For which purposes, as well as that of giving pious retreats for laymen, he desired that the houses of his institute should be freely opened. Moreover, for the extension of faith and piety, he sent evangelical laborers not only into the provinces of France, but also into Italy, Poland, Scotland, Ireland, and even to Barbary and to the Indies. And at the death of Louis XIII, whom he had attended and exhorted on his deathbed, Vincent himself was summoned by the Queen Anne of Austria, mother of Louis XIV, and made a member of the young king's Council of Conscience. In this position, he most zealously urged that only the more worthy men should be placed in authority over the churches and monasteries, that civil discords, single combats, slowly spreading false doctrines, which he both perceived and dreaded, should be ended, and that due obedience should be rendered by all to the apostolic decisions. There was no kind of misfortune which he did not, with fatherly tenderness, endeavor to relieve. The faithful groaning beneath the Turkish yoke, infants which had been abandoned, wayward youths, maidens exposed to danger, nuns driven from their convents, fallen women, convicts condemned to the galleys, infirm strangers, disabled workmen, and even lunatics, and beggars without number, all these he received and devoutly assisted with resources and in hospices which have lasted to this day. When Lorraine, Champagne, Picardy, and other provinces were devastated by plague, famine, and war, he relieved their necessities with an open hand. He founded many societies for seeking out and alleviating the lot of the wretched, among them a celebrated association of matrons, widely spread under the name of Sisters of Charity. He likewise promoted the foundation of the Daughters of the Cross, of Providence, and of Saint Genevieve, for the education of the weaker sex. Amid these and other most important affairs, he was ever intent upon God, affable to everyone, and always true to himself, simple, upright, lowly, and even shrank from honors, riches, and luxuries. He was heard to say that in nothing was there any pleasure for him except in Christ Jesus, whom he desired to imitate in all things. At length, worn out with bodily pains, labors, and old age, on September 27, in the year of salvation 1660, and in the 85th year of his age, at Paris, in the house of Saint Lazare, which is the mother house of the congregation of the mission, he calmly fell asleep. Since he became illustrious in miracles, Clement XII placed him among the saints, assigning July 19th as his annual feast. And Leo XIII, at the request of many bishops, proclaimed and appointed this notable hero of divine charity, who has deserved so exceedingly well of every class of men, as the special patron before God of all the charitable societies existing in the entire Catholic world, and in any way soever emanating from his foundation. July 20, St. Jerome Emiliani, Confessor. Jerome was born at Venice, of a patrician family of the Emiliani, and from his boyhood was devoted to a military life. In a most troublesome period of the Republic, he was placed in command of Castelnuovo in Quiro, in the mountains of Treviso. The fortress was taken by the enemy, and Jerome was thrown, bound hand and foot, into a noisome dungeon. When he found himself destitute of all human aid, the Most Blessed Virgin, prevailed upon by his prayers, mercifully came to his assistance, loosened his bonds, and led him safely through the midst of his enemies, who had possession of every road, till he was within sight of Treviso. Having entered the city, in testimony of the favor he had received, he hung on the altar of the Mother of God, to whom he had vowed himself, his manacles, shackles, and chains, which he had brought with him. On his return to Venice, he began more earnestly to cultivate the exercises of piety. He was exceedingly lavish towards the poor, but he was particularly moved to pity for the orphan children who wandered poor and dirty about the town. He received them into houses which he rented, where he fed them at his own expense and trained them to lead Christian lives. About this, the blessed Cajetan and Peter Carafta, afterwards Paul IV, disembarked at Venice. They commended Jerome's spirit and his new institution for gathering orphans together, and introduced him to the hospital called the Incurables, where he would be able to devote himself with equal charity to the education of orphans and to the service of the saints. Soon, their suggestion, he crossed over to the adjoining mainland and found orphanages first at Brescia, then at Bergamo and Como. At Bergamo, in particular, besides two orphanages, one for boys and the other for girls, he opened a house for women who had been converted from an infamous life, which house was something new in that country. Finally, he stopped at Somascia, a small village in the territory of Bergamo, near the border of the Venetian dominions, and there established headquarters for himself and for his followers, and gave shape to the congregation which on this account is named the Somascia. In the course of time it spread and increased, and for the greater benefit of the Christian Republic, it undertook, besides the direction of orphans and the care of sacred buildings, the education, both liberal and moral, of young men in colleges, academies, and seminaries. The Holy Pius V enrolled it among religious orders, and other pontiffs have adorned it with privileges. Intent upon bringing orphans together, he journeyed to Milan and Ticino, and in both places he collected armies of children, and he carefully prepared for them, through the favor of certain noblemen, a home, food, clothing, and teachers. Then he returned to Somascia, and making himself all things to all men, he shirked no labor which he foresaw might tend to the good of his neighbor. He mixed freely with the peasants scattered over the fields, and while he afforded them his aid in reaping the fruits of the earth, he would explain to them the mysteries of faith. He busied himself in taking care of children with the greatest patience, and cleansed the heads of boys foul with scurf, and he dressed the festering wounds of the country people with such great success that it was thought he had received the gift of healing. On the mountain overhanging Somascia, he found a cave in which he hid himself, and there, scourging himself, spending whole days fasting, passing the greater part of the night in prayer, and snatching a short sleep on the bare rock, he expiated his own sins and those of others. In an interior recess of this grotto, water trickled from the dry rock, obtained, as constant tradition says, by the prayers of the servant of God. It still flows, even to the present day, and being taken into different countries, it very often gives health to the sick. At length, when a contagion was spreading over the whole valley, and he was attending the sick and carrying the dead to the grave on his own shoulders, he contracted the disease and died at the age of 56. His precious death, which he had foretold a short time before, occurred in the year 1537. He was illustrious both in life and after death for many miracles, and Benedict XIV enrolled him among the blessed, and Clement XIII solemnly inscribed his name in the calendar of the saints. July 22nd, St. Mary Magdalene, Penitent. From a sermon of St. Gregory, Pope. Mary Magdalene, who had been a sinner in the city, through love of truth washed away the stains of sin with her tears. And the voice of the truth is fulfilled in which it is said, many sins are forgiven her because she has loved much. For she who formerly had remained cold in sin was afterwards blazing with the fire of love. She would not depart from the sepulchre of the Lord, though even the disciples went away. She sought him whom she found not. She sought him weeping, and enkindled by the fire of her love, she yearned for the love of him whom she believed had been stolen away. And so it happened that she alone saw him, who had remained to look for him, for perseverance is truly the strength of a good work. She sought him therefore at first, and by no means found him. She persevered in her search, and so it befell her that she found him, and this was so ordered that her longing should be increased, and by its increase of strength should find what it sought. For it is of this that the Church, the Spouse, in the Canticle of Canticles says, on my bed, through the nights, I sought him whom my soul loveth. For we see our beloved on our bed, when in the short rest of this present life we sigh with longing after our Redeemer. We seek him by night, because although our mind is on the alert for him, yet our eyes are still in darkness. But if the soul does not find her beloved, it remains for her to arise and to go round the city, that is, by thought and inquiry, to go through the holy church of the elect, to seek him through the streets and public places, that is, to gaze at those walking through the narrow and the broad ways, that if it be possible to find him there, she may search for his footprints, since there are some, even of those who live the life of the world, from whom something of virtue may be learned for our imitation. And the watchmen who keep the city find us in our search, because the holy fathers who guard the strong position of the church hasten to meet our good endeavors by teaching us, either by word or by writing. When we have been but a little way through those teachings, we find him whom we love, for although in his humility our Redeemer became a man among men, yet was he because of his... July 3rd, St. Apollinaris, Bishop and Martyr. Apollinaris came to Rome from Antioch with the Prince of the Apostles, by whom he was consecrated bishop, and sent to Ravenna to preach that he had converted many. He was seized by the pagan priests and severely beaten. And when at his prayer a nobleman named Boniface, who had long been dumb, recovered his speech, and his daughter was delivered from an unclean spirit, a fresh tumult was raised against Apollinaris. Beaten with walk barefoot over burning coals, but as the fire did him no injury, he was driven from the city. He then lay hid some time with certain Christians, and then went to Aemilia, where he brought back to life the dead daughter of the patrician Rufinus, and on this account the entire family of Rufinus believed in Jesus Christ. The prefect, greatly angered by this, summoned Apollinaris and seriously him to put an end to the propagation of the faith of Christ in the city. But since Apollinaris paid no attention to his commands, he was tortured on the rack, boiling water poured into his wounds, and his mouth was bruised with a stone. Then he was loaded with iron chains and shut up in prison. 4 days afterward, he was put on board ship and sent into exile. But having suffered shipwreck, he came to Mysia, and from there he passed to the banks of the Danube, and afterwards into Thrace. But since the demon in the temple of Serapis refused to utter his oracular answers, so long as a disciple of the apostle Peter remained there, search was made for some time, and Apollinaris was discovered, and he was ordered to take the ship once more. So he returned to Ravenna, and on the Accian priests, of a centurion, who since he worshipped Christ in secret, allowed Apollinaris to escape by night. When this became, officers pursued him, and having stunned him with blows, left him as that dead. Then he was carried by the Christians, and 7 days after, while exhorting them to constancy in the faith, he departed, illustrious with the glory of martyrdom. His body was buried near.
June 25th, St. James, Apostle. James, the son of Zebedee, own brother of John the Apostle, a Galilean, one of the first apostles to be called, together with his brother, leaving his father and his nets, followed the Lord. Both of them were called Boanerges by Jesus himself. He was one of the three apostles whom the Savior loved the most, and whom he willed to be witnesses of his transfiguration, and to be at hand at the miracle by which he raised from the dead the daughter of the ruler of the, and to be present when he retired to the Mount of Olives to pray to his Father before he was taken prisoner by the Jews. After the ascension of Jesus Christ into heaven, James preached in Judea and Samaria and led many to the Christian faith. After that he set out for Spain and there converted some to Christ, of whom were the seven afterwards made bishops by blessed Peter, and the first to be sent into that country. Then James returned to Jerusalem, and among others instructed Hermogenes, the magician, in the truths of faith. Thereupon Herod Agrippa, who had been raised to the kingship under the emperor Claudius, wishing to curry favor with the Jews, condemned James to death for openly proclaiming Jesus Christ to be God. When the man who had brought him to the tribunal saw the courage with which he went to martyrdom, he immediately declared that he too was a Christian. As they were being hurried to execution, that man implored forgiveness from James, and James kissed him, saying, "Peace be with you." Therefore both of them were beheaded, James having a little while before cured a paralytic. His body was afterwards transferred to Compostela, where it is honored with the highest veneration, pilgrims flocking there from every part of the world out of devotion or to fulfill their vows. The commemoration of his feast is celebrated by the church today, which is the day of his translation, but it was near the feast of Easter that he shed his blood at Jerusalem as a witness to Jesus Christ being the first of the apostles to do so.
July 26th, St. Anne, Mother of the Blessed Virgin Mary. From a sermon of St. John Damascene. The home of Anne is set before us, giving an example at once of marriage and of virginity, the first in the person of the mother, the second in that of the daughter, of whom the one has just been freed from sterility. A little later on is to bring forth Christ in a supernatural birth, adapted by a divine artifice to the circumstances of our nature. Therefore, filled with the divine spirit, her soul happy and joyous, deservedly does Anne cry aloud, "Rejoice with me, for from my sterile womb I have borne the bud of promise, and as I had desired, I feed at my breast the fruit of blessing. I have put off the garment of sterility, and put on the joyful raiment of fruitfulness. Let that other Anne, the rival of Fenena, rejoice with me this day, and let her celebrate with me this new and unexpected miracle, which has been wrought in me as it was in her.
Let Sarah rejoice, she who rejoiced in conception in her old age, and foreshadowed my conception from sterility. Let all the barren and childless sing in harmony together at my visitation made to me from heaven in a wonderful manner. Likewise, let all mothers endowed with this fruitfulness say, Blessed be he who granted what they wished to those who prayed to him, and who gave fruit to the sterile, and granted to her to bear that most happy bud, the Virgin, who was the Mother of God, according to the flesh, whose womb was in heaven, was a heaven in which he dwelt, whom no place can contain. And let us also offer praise becoming to these very things, that she who was called sterile new stands forth as the mother of a virgin mother. Let us say to her in the words of Scripture, How blessed is the house of David, from which thou hast sprung, and the womb in which God fashioned the ark of sanctification, that is, her from whom he himself was conceived, weed. Truly blessed art thou, blessed, thou who hast borne an infant given thee by the blessing of God, that is to say, Mary, whose very name is likewise to be honored in the highest degree, from whom came forth Christ, the flower of life, a virgin whose origin was glorious, and whose childbearing was above all the world. We also congratulate thee, most blessed woman, for truly thou hast brought forth by the divine bounty the hope of all of us, that is, the child of promise. Blessed indeed art thou, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, for the tongues of the godly magnify thy offspring, and every joyful word is spoken concerning thy child. It is truly fitting indeed, and most fitting it is, to praise her who received a revelation by the divine goodness, and brought forth for us such and so great a fruit, from whom came forth the sweet Jesus. July 28th, Saints Nazarian Celsus, Martyrs, Victor the First, Pope and Martyr, and Innocent the First, Pope and Confessor. Nazarius was baptized by the blessed Pope Linus and went into Gaul, and there baptized a boy named Celsus, whom he had first instructed in Christian doctrine. Together they went to Treves, and in Nero's persecution were both thrown into the sea, from which they had a marvelous escape. Afterwards they went to Milan, where they spread the faith of Christ, and were beheaded by the prefect Anilinus, most courageously confessing Christ to be God. Their bodies were buried outside the Roman gate. They were lost sight of for a long time, but by a revelation from God were found by the blessed Ambrose, sprinkled with fresh blood as if they had but just suffered martyrdom. From there they were brought into the city and buried in an honorable tomb. Victor, born in Africa, governed the church in the time of the Emperor. He confirmed the decree of Pius I, which ordered the sacred feast of Easter to be celebrated on a Sunday, and that this rite may be afterwards brought into practice. Councils were held in many places, and finally at the first council of Nice it was decreed that the feast of Easter should be always kept after the 14th day of the month, lest the Christians should seem to imitate the Jews. He ordained that anyone could be baptized, if it were necessary, with any water whatever, provided it was natural water. He expelled from the church the Byzantian Theodotus, the tanner, who taught that Christ was only a man. He wrote on the question of Easter, and some other small works. In two ordinations, which he held in the month of December, he made 4 priests, 7 deacons, and 12 bishops for various places. He was crowned with martyrdom, and buried on the Vatican Hill on the 5th of the calends of August, July 28th, having reigned 9 years, 1 month, and 28 days. Innocent, a native of Albano, lived at the time of Saints Jerome and Augustine. Jerome, writing to the Virgin Demetrius, says of him, Hold fast to the faith of the holy Innocent, who is the son of Anastasius of blessed memory, and his successor on the apostolic chair, and receive no strange doctrine, however shrewd and prudent you may think yourself. Orosius writes that, like the just Lot, Innocent was withdrawn by God's providence and preserved in safety at Ravenna, that he might not be a witness of the ruin of the Roman people. After the condemnation of Pelagius and Celestius, he decreed, in opposition to their heretical teaching, that little children, even though born of a Christian mother, must be born again through baptism, that in regeneration they may be cleansed from the stain which they contracted at their conception. He also approved the observance of fasting on Saturdays, in memory of the burial of Christ the Lord. He reigned 15 years, 1 month, and 10 days. He held 4 ordinations in the month of December, and made 30 priests, 15 deacons, and 54 bishops for various places. He was buried in the cemetery called Ad Ursum Pilatium, there with the cap. July 29th, Saint Martha, Virgin. Martha was born of noble and wealthy parents, but she is more illustrious for her hospitality to Christ the Lord. After his ascension into heaven, she was seized by the Jews, together with her brother and sister, Marcella, her woman-in-waiting, and Maximinus, one of the 72 disciples of Christ the Lord, who had baptized the whole household, and many other Christians. They were put on board a ship without sails or oars and left on the open sea, exposed to certain shipwreck. But the ship, steered by God, came to safe harbor at Marseille, and they were all saved. This miracle, together with their preaching, brought first the people of Marseille, and then of Aix and of the neighborhood, to believe in Christ. Lazarus was made bishop of Marseille, and Maximinus of Aix. But Magdalene, who was accustomed to prayer and to sit at the Lord's feet, in order to enjoy the better part which she had chosen, that is, contemplation of the joys of heaven, retired into a cavern on a very high mountain. There she lived for 30 years, separated from all human association, and every day during that period she was carried aloft by the angels to hear the heavenly praises. But Martha, after having won the hearts of the people of Marseille to a love and admiration of the wonderful charity and holiness of her life, withdrew in the company of several very virtuous women to a spot remote from men, where she lived for a long time, greatly renowned for her piety and prudence. She foretold her death long before it occurred, and at length, famous for miracles, she passed to the Lord on the 4th of the calends of August, July 29th. Her body is held in great veneration at Tarascon. July 31st, Saint Ignatius, Confessor. Ignatius, by nation a Spaniard, born of a noble family at Loyola in Cantabria, at first attended the court of the Catholic king, and later embraced a military career. Having received a wound at the defense of Pampeluna, he lay in a dangerous condition, and by the chance reading of some pious books, he was inflamed to a remarkable degree with a desire to follow in the footsteps of Christ and the saints. He went to Montserrat, and hung up his weapons before the altar of the Blessed Virgin, and keeping watch throughout the night, he began the first campaign of the sacred soldiery. Then, dressed as he was in sackcloth, for he had a short time before given his costly garments to a beggar, he retired to Manresa. Here he remained a whole year, subsisting upon bread and water obtained by begging, fasting every day except Sunday, subduing the flesh with a rough chain and a hair shirt, sleeping on the ground, and scourging himself to the effusion of blood with iron-pitted pointed disciplines. During this time he was so greatly refreshed by bright illuminations from God that afterwards he was wont to say, if the sacred scriptures did not exist, he would nevertheless be ready to die for the faith, because of those revelations alone which the Lord had manifested to him at Manresa. It was at this time that he, a man entirely ignorant of letters, composed that admirable book of exercises which has been approved by the judgment of the Apostolic See, and by its usefulness for everyone. However, in order to make himself more fit for gaining souls, he determined to procure the advantages of education, and began by studying grammar among boys. And since in the meantime he relaxed nothing of his zeal for the salvation of others, one wonders at what hardships and insults he endured in every place, undergoing the hardest trials, even imprisonment and stripes almost unto death. Nevertheless, he always aspired to suffer far more than these for the glory of his Lord. At Paris, he was joined by 9 companions from that university of different nations who had taken master's degrees in arts and theology. There, at Montmartre, he laid the first foundations of the order, which he was later to institute at Rome. He added to the 3 usual vows a 4th one concerning the missions, thus binding it more closely to the apostolic see. Paul III first welcomed and confirmed the society, and later other pontiffs and the Council of Trent approved it. But Ignatius, having sent the holy Francis Xavier to preach the gospel in the Indies, and having sent others to spread religion in other regions of the world, declared war against the superstition and heresy of the pagans. He waged this war with such never-failing success that it has always been the universal opinion, confirmed also by the utterances of pontiffs, that God raised up Ignatius and the society founded by him to oppose Luther and the heretics of his own time, as formerly he had raised up other holy men to oppose other heretics. But his first care was the restoration of piety among Catholics. The beauty of the sacred buildings, the giving of catechetical instructions, the frequent attendance upon sermons and upon the sacraments, all these were fostered and increased by him. He opened schools everywhere for the education of youth in piety and letters, and he founded at Rome the German College, convents for unmarried mothers and for young girls who were in danger, houses for orphans and catechumens of both sexes. To these and other works of piety, he devoted himself unweariedly in order to gain souls for God. Once he was heard to say that if he were given his choice, he would rather live uncertain of attaining the beatific vision and in the meanwhile devote himself to the service of God and the salvation of his neighbor than die at once certain of eternal glory. His power over the devils was wonderful. The holy Philip Neri and others saw his countenance shining with heavenly light. At length, in the 65th year of his age, he passed to the embrace of his Lord, whose greater glory he had ever on his lips and ever sought in all things. He was noted for miracles and for his great services to the church, and Gregory the 15th added him to the calendar of the saints. Pius the 11th, complying with the earnest desires of the bishops, constituted and declared him to be the heavenly patron of all spiritual exercises. Feasts of August. August 1st, St. Peter's Chains. In the reign of the younger Theodosius, when his wife Eudocia had come to Jerusalem to fulfill a vow, she was there honored with many gifts. Notable above all the rest was the gift which she received of an iron chain, adorned with gold and precious stones, which they affirmed to be that very one with which the apostle Peter had been bound by Herod. Eudocia piously venerated this chain and then sent it to Rome to her daughter Eudoxia, who carried it to the supreme pontiff. And he, in his turn, showed her another chain by which the same apostle had been bound when Nero was emperor. When therefore the pontiff placed a Roman chain together with that which she had brought from Jerusalem, it happened that they fitted together in such a manner that they seemed no longer 2 chains, but a single one, made by the same workman. On account of this miracle, the holy chains began to be held in such great honor that a church with the title of Eudoxia on the Esquiline was dedicated under the name of St. Peter in Chains, and the memory of its dedication was celebrated by a feast on the calends of August, August 1st. From that time, the honor which was wont to be given on this day to the profane festivities of the heathen began to be given to Peter's chains, and the mere touch of them healed the sick and put the devils to flight. And so in the year of man's salvation, 969, a certain count of the household of the Emperor Otto was possessed by an unclean spirit, so that he tore himself with his own teeth. Wherefore, by command of the emperor, he was taken to the Pontiff John, who touched the count's neck with the holy chain, and the wicked spirit, breaking forth, left the man free. After that, the devotion to the holy chains was spread throughout the city. August 2nd. St. Alphonsus Mary de Liguori, Bishop, Confessor, and Doctor of the Church. Alphonsus Mary de Liguori was born of noble parents at Naples, and from his early youth gave clear proofs of sanctity. While he was still a child, his parents presented him to the holy Francis de Geronimo of the Society of Jesus. Francis, after long prayer, declared that the child would reach his 90th year, that he would be raised to the episcopal dignity, and that he would be a very great blessing to the church. Already, even in boyhood, he shrank from games, and by word and example incited noble youths to Christian modesty. As a young man, he enrolled himself in pious associations, and made it his delight to wait upon the sick in the public hospitals, to spend much time in prayer in the churches, and frequently to receive the sacred mysteries. He added piety to the study of letters to such a degree that when scarcely 16 years old, he took the degree of both laws in the university of his native city. In obedience to his father, he undertook to plead causes at the bar. In the discharge of this office, although he acquired a considerable reputation, he found by experience the dangers of a lawyer's career, and of his own accord abandoned the practice of that profession. After that, he rejected with scorn a brilliant marriage proposed to him by his father, renounced his right of inheritance as oldest son, and hanging up his sword at the altar of the Virgin of Ransom, he surrendered himself to the service of God. Having been ordained priest, he so furiously assailed vice, and with such great zeal, that in the exercise of his apostolic ministry, he hastened about here and there, and made a great number of conversions of abandoned souls. He had a special compassion for the poor and the peasantry, and so founded the congregation of priests of the Most Holy Redeemer, who, following in the steps of that Redeemer, were to preach the gospel to the poor in field, village, and town. And lest he should ever turn aside from his purpose, he bound himself by a perpetual vow never to allow any time to be wasted. And so, burning with zeal for souls, he strove to gain souls for Christ and to lead them in the way of the more perfect life, both by preaching the divine word and by writings full of sacred learning and piety. It is indeed marvelous how many enmities he quenched, how many wanderers he brought back to the straight path of salvation. He had the greatest devotion to the Mother of God, and published a book on her glories, and while he was discoursing upon them with great earnestness in preaching, more than once there appeared a marvelous light projected on him from the statue of the Virgin, and in the presence of all the people he was rapt in ecstasy, with his countenance all aglow. Unremitting in contemplation of the Passion of the Lord and of the Sacred Eucharist, he spread devotion to them in a wonderful degree, and when he was praying before the altar of the Blessed Sacrament, or saying Mass, which he never omitted, owing to the impetuousness of his love, he either became dissolved in tears in his seraphic ardors, or was agitated with unwonted movements, or was rapt out of his senses. He joined a wonderful innocence of life, which he had never soiled with the stain of mortal sin, with an equally wonderful spirit of penance, and chastised his body by fasting, by light chains of iron, hair shirts, and scourgings even to blood. At the same time, he was remarkable for the gifts of prophecy, reading of hearts, bilocation, and miracles. He shrank from the ecclesiastical dignities which were constantly being offered him, but he was compelled by the authority of Pope Clement XIII to accept the government of the Church of St. Agatha de Gotti. As bishop, he only changed his outward dress and made no alteration in his severe rule of life. There was the same temperance, very great zeal for Christian discipline, vehemence in restraining vice and keeping errors at a distance, and earnestness in discharging the other duties of the pastoral charge. He was generous towards the poor, distributing to them all the revenues of his see, and in a time of severe scarcity of grain, he sold even the furniture of his house to feed his starving people. He was all things to all men. He brought back religious women to a more perfect rule of life, and provided for the founding of a monastery for nuns of his congregation. Severe and continual sickness forced him to resign his bishopric, and he who had left his disciples a poor man returned to them a poor man. At length, although worn out in body by old age, labors, chronic gout, and other very painful maladies, but with his mind still alert, he never ceased to discourse and to write concerning heavenly things, until in his 90th year, on the calends of August 1st, in the year 1787, amid the tears of his disciples, he died in the greatest peace. Thereafter, as he was illustrious for his virtues and his miracles, the Supreme Pontiff Pius VII added him to the calendar of the blessed in the year 1816. And as his memory shone with further signs and wonders, Gregory XVI, on the Feast of the Most Holy Trinity, in the year 1839, with solemn rites, added him to the list of the saints. And finally, the Supreme Pontiff Pius IX, after consulting the Congregation of Sacred Rites, declared him to be a doctor of the Universal Church. We will continue with the Roman Breviary for summer on Side B of this tape.